desde Miami, Esther tiene otra historia.
Claro que sí, María Camila, una historia con una nueva interfaz de cerebro ordenador que le permite a los pacientes con esclerosis lateral amiotrófica recuperar el habla con un implante cerebral. María Camila, para eso nos atiende en este momento Sergei Stravsky. Él es un neurocientífico y es profesor asistente en el Departamento de Cirugía Neurológica de UC Davis y es también el co-investigador principal de este estudio. Así que vamos a saludar al doctor en este momento y le vamos a preguntar si nos puede explicar brevemente cómo funciona esta interfaz y cuál es el papel específico del implante en este de este implante. Hello, doctor. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Our first question, we wanted to begin by asking you if you could briefly explain how the brain-computer interface works and the specific role of the brain implant in decoding speech.
I'd be happy to. So the key thing here is that for people with vocal tract paralysis, in this case, our participant was a man living with ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, their brain is still functioning normally, but the connections from the brain to the muscles aren't working. So in this case, he's trying to speak. He knows what he wants to say. He's forming those words in his mind. He's trying to move his mouth and lips and jaw and larynx to speak, but the signals aren't reaching it. And that means that we can essentially bypass the injury. So we can implant electrodes. In our case, we use 256 tiny electrodes in what's called the speech motor cortex, so the part of the brain that's normally making those muscle commands. And because those electrodes are there in the brain, they're picking up those brain cells' activity as the person's trying to speak. And then using machine learning, we can figure out what words he's trying to say based just on the brain activity, ignoring the muscles, which are paralyzed, and actually read out and decode what words he's saying and have them appear on a screen, and then have that read out loud by a computer algorithm that's been trained to sound like his voice before the disease. So basically, the implant allows us to get to the source of information, which is the brain, even though other parts of the nervous system are damaged.
Dice que la clave con estas personas y sobre todo las personas que tienen esta discapacidad en específico es que el cerebro aún les sigue funcionando de forma normal. Sin embargo, por esta distrofia que tienen en los músculos, la señal no alcanza a llegar. Entonces, básicamente, lo que hace este implante es que crea un tipo de conexión que logra poder mandar esa señal que, pues, podemos decir que está dañada y logra llegar así a la fuente de información por medio, gracias a este implante.
Sí, Esther, me gustaría saber si es posible que este tipo de implante se pueda ver reflejado no solo en el habla como fue esto, sino en una actividad más física, de alguna manera, de lograr que este tipo de descubrimiento se vea directamente afectando, no sé, las extremidades de las personas afectadas por esta enfermedad o pues haciendo llevarles una vida un poco más fácil en ese sentido de poder mover las extremidades.
So, doctor, we were wondering if this implant is also possible to see the result not only in the voice, but in other extremities, maybe more on the physical side, if it can help a person move or do something.
Yes, it can. And so, in fact, our study is part of this larger BrainGate clinical trial, which has been running for about 20 years now. And it got its start trying to restore simpler communication by moving a computer mouse. So think of somebody with paralysis, unable to move their arms and legs, trying to move their hand. And then those hand commands are decoded to move a computer mouse or to click. So that's where it got started. And then even more recently, like in the last decade, people have used this type of technology, both in our larger clinical trial and other labs and other trials around the world, to do things like have people move robot arms so they could pick up a cup of water and bring it to their mouth, or decode the intention to walk. So there's been some really exciting work out of Switzerland where someone with paralysis is trying to walk. They decode that they're trying to take a step from the brain and then electrically stimulate the spine to have the legs move. And there's also been work on what's called functional electrical stimulation, where one can decode arm and hand movement intentions from brain signals and then actually have a second device which is implanted and has wires that go to the muscles and stimulate the muscles to basically allow someone to move their own formerly paralyzed arm based on their brain commands, which is another way to, you can think of that as, again, bypassing the injury.
Bueno, pues nos dice que claro que sí es posible y que justamente este estudio, y gracias a este, pues hay estudios más grandes que llevan más de 20 años y lo que tratan de hacer es de restaurar estos movimientos. Y nos da, por ejemplo, el ejemplo de una mano que trata de mover un mouse, por ejemplo, o también otros estudios que usan esta tecnología para que han logrado que personas logren agarrar con un brazo robótico un vaso de agua y así como tratando de que estas señales del cerebro puedan ser transferidas para que las personas puedan utilizar estos otros implementos para así mover y usar y hacer el uso físico para llegar a hacer a lograr mover ciertas cosas. También habló de los ojos, por ejemplo, de varias posibilidades de que este implante puede ser usado para llegar a este fin. Y a mí me gustaría preguntarle sobre los desafíos técnicos que han tenido y qué desafíos enfrentaron al desarrollar esta tecnología y cómo fueron superados, porque este estudio realmente pues ha logrado algo muy grande. So we wanted to ask, what technical and clinical challenges did you face in developing this technology? Because it is very successful from what we can see. So how did you overcome these?
There were several previous studies, including from our colleagues at Stanford and some work from University of California, San Francisco, that had already shown speech decoding sort of like this. And so we had quite a lot of confidence it would work. But in those studies, the accuracy was lower. It was at about 75% correct, which was still very exciting, but that's not enough to communicate daily without being misunderstood. And so one of the main challenges that we faced was how to make it more accurate. And our strategy for that was twofold. First, looking at the prior work, it was clear that if you have more electrodes in the brain, you get a better signal about what the person's trying to say. So we built on our Stanford colleagues' work, and we doubled the number of electrodes in the parts of the brain that control speech. This also involved a lot of careful work to figure out precisely where in the brain to put the electrode arrays. And we did that using functional imaging, so fMRI and other techniques. And then the second is we improved the computer algorithm. So we had access to some of that previous data, so we could use that to already get a head start. And then after this procedure was done, we started collecting data with this participant. Over several weeks and months, we continued to optimize the algorithm and change parameters and otherwise sort of iteratively make it better and better, so that accuracy, which was 90% on our second ever day of him using it, gradually went up to as high as 99% on the best days, and on average, 97.5%.
Well, Doctor, thank you so much for being here with us today at W Radio.
You're very welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Good luck on the following trials. Bueno, lo que nos dice es que pues como nos había dicho antes, hay unos estudios anteriores, nos dice que de la Universidad de Stanford y de San Francisco, que ya mostraban esta decodificación. Entonces, pues ellos ya sabían que esto, lo que ellos querían hacer, iba a funcionar. Sin embargo, estos estudios anteriores tenían una efectividad menor. Entonces, en lo que ellos se basaron era en entender cómo podían mejorar esa efectividad. Entonces se dieron cuenta que necesitaban una señal más clara en el cerebro. Entonces se dieron cuenta que necesitaban más neurotransmisores para tener una señal aún más clara, para poder entender cuál es esa señal que el cerebro está mandando para ver qué es lo que se tenía que hacer. Y aparte de esta mejor señal, también necesitaban encontrar el lugar óptimo para poder poner el implante. Entonces, ¿dónde es el mejor lugar en el cerebro para poder poner el implante? Básicamente, el señor nos dice que trataban de mejorar, de mejorar estos estudios anteriores que ya sabían que habían funcionado y poder llegar así hasta un 90% de efectividad, que es lo que tiene el estudio de ahora.